Welcome.
Welcome. Is it Ben?
It is. And who do we have the pleasure of joining us?
Mr. David Gonzalez.
You know, I knew it was you, and I should have just said your name, Dave Gonzalez. I just started hitting recording, and so you're the first voice that people are going to hear when they listen to the replay of tonight's recording and discussion around Pelmanism with my good friend and co-host, Dave Licani. But before we begin, Dave Gonzalez, will you tell us why you called in this evening?
I called in because I'm a big fan of yours and Dave Licani's, and I always seem to be busy when you're doing your calls, and on top of that, I'm curious about what Pelmanism is. I've seen you tweeting about it and mentioning it at different points, and my curiosity was piqued enough that I decided to check it out.
Awesome. Welcome to the program. I'm going to go ahead and manually unmute you. If you're calling into the bridge line, or I'm going to manually mute you, if you're calling into the bridge line, you can mute and unmute yourself by hitting star 2. I'm actually going to manually mute some of the people, and we're going to get started with in just a moment with Dave Licani giving us an overview I have trouble getting the word to come out of my mouth. When I say Pelmanism, there are different pronunciations that sometimes want to escape my lips. And so instead of digging a hole and digging myself deeper into that hole, you at home, I'd like you to help me welcome onto the program a master of persuasion, the gentleman who has shown the United States the true power of an hour, the man who Mark Victor Hansen has relied on to steward his image, gentleman recently seen on Donnie Deutsch's The Big Idea, Mr. Dave Licani. Dave, welcome to the Badass Call.
Wow, thanks, Ben. That's probably the best introduction I've ever had. That's amazing. Could you repeat that again and this time record it extra loud so that I can clip it and use it?
We've
that
got
was wonderful. Thank you.
You are welcome. I'm excited to be here in Boise with you and to actually just be across the hallway, although, you know, we both have the doors closed to our office. We are in the same suite, and we are live from Boise, Idaho.
That's right. If we had potato guns, we could be shooting at each other right now.
Where's Russell Brunson and his potato guns when we need them?
That's right. That's right.
I know that Boise or Idaho has the greatest quantity of millionaires per capita. There is a higher incidence of millionaires in Idaho than in any state in the United States. Before we talk about Pelmanism, can you tell me what it is that's in the air or the water here in Idaho that creates the greatest quantity of millionaires per capita?
Yeah, and I think that that's still true, in fact. And I think what it is, there's a number of things. Number one, Idaho is not a hugely populous state, so per capita could affect it, to be sure. But there's a number of things that cause that to be true here. Number one is that land in a lot of parts of Idaho is cheap, and so it's particularly well suited for certain kinds of agriculture. So a lot of people are able to farm or raise livestock here very cost effectively. The tax base here is very low, so people are able to do that. But I think there's some more fundamental things that really, I mean, they're fundamental, but they're also sort of those intangibles. And, you know, this is a fairly new state in terms of our union. And it's also a state where, you know, there's a lot of fierce sort of Western independence that doesn't show up in some other states that are maybe a little more cosmopolitan, that don't have as much wilderness area left. I would liken it to more something like Alaska or someplace like that, where, you know, where people are still rugged individuals in a lot of ways. And so with that in mind, they oftentimes create their own businesses and create their own enterprises that start here and grow out from here. So like the Albertsons grocery chain started here, Morrison Knutson, which was responsible for building some of the biggest, you know, dams and tunnel systems in the world, started here. And I think that's why, Ben, that was sort of a long answer to your question, but that's it.
Cool. I'm going to go ahead and mute out. There's one other line here. Let me try muting. I see it. For those that are just coming on, thank you so much for joining us. I'm going to hand mute the people that are coming on. When we actually have the discussion, if those that I have muted want to participate, you'll be able to hit *2 to unmute yourself. So, Dave, before we go any further, let's talk about what Pelmanism is. For those that are listening and have downloaded and read the book by Pat O'Brien and Dr. Joe Vitale, can you give us an overview of what they can expect if they haven't started reading yet?
Sure. Well, Pelmanism is Pelmanism was created by a person named William Joseph Inover, and he was he first started out by creating this memory course, and that's probably what he's best known for. He's actually best known for his book called Your Mind and How to Use It, and then his 12 gray booklets, which is what they were called, which were his sort of 12 little courses that would help people become more efficient or effective in terms of running their mind. And a lot of people, he wrote these and brought them to bear around the beginning of the 20th century in the early 1900s. He was born in 1880 or 1870, I don't remember, and died in 1940s. And he was one of the first people around the New Thought kind of movement, and he sort of took a more scientific approach, if you will, to how your brain works. He introduced the ideas of psychology, even though psychology was still in those days, kind of burgeoning field. He brought some of those things to bear, and he brought some ideas around memory and what memory might look like and how it might work, but most importantly, how to form your memory. He also brought in some ideas around hypnotism and relaxation and focus and a lot of things in order to try and make you a better person. As opposed to a lot of the other things that came out during that same time, The Science of Getting Rich by Wallace Wattles and some of those kinds of things, which were more of the New Thought movement that were related to more esoteric ideas. This was related, or at least attempted to relate back to science in some meaningful way, and gave specific sorts of exercises, some even physical, for your body that you could use that would help you become more focused, more attentive, have a better memory, and become ultimately a better person.
And this idea about becoming a better person, and specifically through what you brought up in terms of New Thought and the New Thought movement that was coming on at the turn of the 18th to the turn of the 20th century, from the 1800s to the early 1900s, there was a lot of literature that was published about New Thought, and so Pelmanism is part of the New Thought movement?
It was a piece of it. It was lumped certainly into the same category. In that New Thought movement, there happened to be things like the patent medicine salespeople, the people who were doing things like Wallace Wattles and some of the people who were, talking about the energy of thoughts and possibilities. Rhonda Byrne attributes Wallace Wattles' Science of Getting Rich to, being the first book that launched her down her path of what ultimately became The Secret, and most of what's in The Secret is not even really good repackaging of a lot of that work that was.
Orison Martin is credited with coming up with the phrase "the law of attraction," and Orison Martin was publishing around 1895 to 1930,
right.
With books like "How to Get What You Want" and "The Accidental Success," he is quoted as saying, "Because everything under the sun obey the law of attraction." So perhaps, much of Rhonda Byrne's success comes from the early New Thought movement of 100 to 120 years ago.
Or at least certainly repackaging in it.
Okay. And so with Pelmanism, what are some of the keys to Pelmanism, or how can somebody get started with Pelmanism?
Well, if you don't mind, I'll share with you. I've got some old material available that from around 1916 that talks about like some of the things. Now, ultimately, he received a lot of pushback on what he talked about, and we'll talk about that more in a little bit. But here are some of the. It said, amongst the defects and weaknesses claimed to be rapidly and permanently banished by Pelmanism were forgetfulness, depression, brain fog, inertia, weakness of will, want of energy, lack of ideas, indefiniteness, indecision, moodiness, mind wandering, shyness and diffidence, lack of confidence, unnecessary fears and phobias, lack of system, procrastination, and mental stagnation. It also makes your brain, it also makes and keeps your brain fresh, vigilant, and self-reliant, and develops such valuable positive qualities as concentration, observation, perception, judgment, initiative, creative imagination, optimism, strength of will, decisiveness, originality, resourcefulness, mental energy, organizing power, salesmanship, reliability, self-confidence, directive ability, driving power, cheerfulness, moral courage, ambition, self-control, social charm and tact, conversational ability, speaking and debating power, lecturing ability, preaching ability, personal magnetism, the power of thinking constructively, presence of mind, and reliable memory. So this is where some of these, you know, because there were no real, at that time, any real, you know, laws or anything kind of limiting what you could say, you know, they made a lot of claims, but it really came down to, it came down to like probably, you know, 12 ideas, I mean, in his 12 books. But what it ultimately, he said that it taught was the ability to learn and remember, the ability to apply the knowledge thus gained, the ability to reflect, to perceive, to compare, to judge, and to decide, the elimination of harmful habits, the cure of mental weakness, the development of latent powers, the exercise of willpower, the formation and development of character, and the full development of intelligent direction of your personality. And so those were the sort of the ideas that, you know, that that he focused on. And then his he actually had 15 lessons in his 12-book format. And one was the soul of Pelmanism, driving out the inferiority complex. Number three was your purpose in life and how to achieve it. Number four, the will to conquer. Concentration and mental control, the science and art of self-realization, the money brain, an inquiry into its qualities, the world of people and things to know about them, self-expression and personality, good judgment in business and affairs, the scientific method or how to handle your facts, your subconscious life, creating new ideas, studies in imagination and originality. And so he was talking about creativity, but he called it imagination. The use and abuse of reading, how to organize your mental life, and then Pelmanism in action was lesson 15. So,
is it healthy for somebody to follow his curriculum?
Well, I think that it's, you know, this again, I don't see this as necessarily divisive or as destructive, maybe as wholeheartedly and you know, believing in and following the law of attraction, for example. But I think that he probably did as good a job as any layman did at that time of explaining the science of his time. So he used, you know, he used like mimetic devices. No, I'm sorry, not mimetics, mnemonic devices to teach people how to memorize things, which is a very valid and valuable tool. Still taught today, Ben. I think you probably know more than me, but like in magic courses where people do long list memorization and those kinds of things, they're typically using a form of Pelmanism that he was teaching in the, you know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s. They're using some of those devices today. And so is it, you know, but some of the things he also talks about, you know, have been disproven in psychology, and some of the beliefs that he had about the brain and those kind of things, they're just simply antiquated or outdated. And so it's not dangerous to practice them. They just don't have the necessary functionality that he hoped that they would. We now know more, and so we can get better results faster by practicing newer things. Some of the stuff that I talk about in my new book, The 12 Factors of Business Success, for example.
Now, The 12 Factors of Business Success is certainly growing in popularity, and today on Amazon it was below 500. If people want to get a hold of the business success tools that you give out, what's the best website for them to go to?
They can just go to bestsuccessfactors.com and they can check it out there. And it's really a book about your personal development in your business. It's not a book about how to do this in your business or that in your business to be more successful. It's about the kinds of things that you need to do with yourself in order to become personally more effective and thus more successful in your business. So I don't want to make this a long discussion about that book, though. It's a great book, and I think people will enjoy it. It's written with two doctors of psychology and myself, Dr. Kevin Hogan and Dr. Molly Marty, and then myself, who gives a very practical application and spin to everything that we talk about. It's the first time I've been able to incorporate my beliefs and my practical applications of what I've done in order to achieve the success in my life in a book. But that, enough about that, really. I mean that.
Pelman was known for criticizing secondary education and was critical for the way, you know, that millions of minds were being shaped to look at and perceive and process and organize their mental life. And in a little bit, we're going to have an exciting guest star join us, the legendary gentleman Glenn Turner. And before we get there, to fully appreciate, you know, Glenn's take on how to keep that positive, growing energy, I'm curious, Dave, about your perception, whether or not you agree with Pellman in terms that, our current educational system actually does more constriction and harm than it does to actually liberate and, allow the user to make the most of their own personal education.
Well, there are some things that I certainly reject in our current form of or our current system of education, particularly public education, which is why in all fairness and, full disclosure, I put my daughter in a private school for this very reason, not because I could afford to, but because I thought it was the most important thing that I could do for her. Because I don't believe in mediocrity, Ben, and that's one thing that Pellman really pointed to in his courses, was that, you know, mediocrity is not necessarily something to be strived for, that you should strive to be in, you know, he used very common words of his time, but they tend to be polarizing words for our time. So, you know, the superior man and things like that would be words that he would use. But what he really meant by that was, look, be the best that you can be, and don't, you know, mediocrity is not something to be strived for, or mediocrity is something to be avoided. And our educational system today, I think, oftentimes not just rewards mediocrity, but it encourages people to be average. And I'm afraid that that's a, you know, it's not a value certainly that I want my daughter to learn. And I think it's an important distinction that we have to make when looking at education, is that, you know, there are winners and losers in every walk of life. Things are good and they are bad. And to encourage children to be average, everybody get along, everybody just work to the middle, is not good. It's to have everyone work to their highest potential, and to push them past whatever they believed their limitations were. That's, you know, that's where education is at. And so one of the things that Pellman tried to do was to get people to reorganize their mind in a way that he thought would more efficiently support the ideas of being able to gather your own education, or at least get the most out of the education you were receiving.
And is this part of Emil Q's, you know, auto-suggestion and that type of technology that was being developed in the early part of the 20th century?
Yeah, and so he was, you know, he talked about hypnotism and auto-suggestion and those kind of things. And again, his methodologies for the day were very rudimentary compared to what we know today in NLP or, you know, or in hypnosis. But, you know, like one of the things that he taught at a very early time was progressive relaxation, where he would have you, he was also big about observation. I want to start there first. One of his big things was observation. So he would have you go out and stand in, you know, outside and make lists of everything that you heard or saw. And then he would ask you to take your list, look at your list, and now see if you notice anything different or hear anything more that you hadn't noticed before. So he's trying to get you to expand your awareness that way. And so then he did the same sort of thing, like at night he would have you lay in bed and then, you know, rub your skin and then feel the sensations of having rubbed your skin and what that feels like, you know, on your body, and then become aware of those sensations so you became more in touch with how your body felt. And then he did progressive relaxation, which was, you know, clench your toes, clench your feet. It's the same thing we do if we, you know, for a progressive relaxation into hypnosis induction. You know, you have people, okay, now focus on your feet, squint your, you know, crunch your feet together, now let them relax, notice how they begin to become more relaxed, now, you know, clench your calves, now your thighs, you know, now clench your stomach and let it relax and begin to notice how that relaxation flows. And he would, so without all the extra hypnotic language, he would have people do that and they would become more and more deeply relaxed. But part of his purpose was that was the best time for auto-suggestion, was when you were deeply relaxed, which we know that people are in a deeply relaxed state when they're hypnotized, though a highly focused state. And I don't think that he really understood at that moment, because I don't think people were able to accurately test or describe what had happened at hypnosis at that time, in hypnosis at that time, to know that it was actually that hypnosis is a very, very heightened state of focus.
Got it. I'm not sure where to take this conversation presently. I know that Glenn Turner presentation is going to help us all feel elevated. do you think now would be a good time to invite Glenn onto the program?
Sure. You can bring him on any time. I think this will be fascinating.
Fantastic. Glenn, what I'm going to ask you to do is to hit star 2 to unmute yourself on the line.
Hey, Ben.
Welcome. I'm grateful to have you on the program.
Good to be here.
And I know that afterwards we should probably do an explanation of, as I put an asterisk on the page. But do you want to jump straight into the speech you've given before?
I do, Ben. And it all started way back 7 years ago. It's taken a while for us to achieve the success we wanted to enjoy. And the first thing I had to do is get my head right. You see, I was determined. And we made it because I was too dumb to figure out how it wouldn't work. That's the problem with many of you on the call tonight. Every time somebody puts something in front of you, you get excited about it just long enough to figure out how it ain't going to work, then you give up. Or, you know, you go looking for something else that somebody else has got. And that's the reason you're not as successful as you want to be, because you need to start being intelligently ignorant. You see, Ben, I've discovered the secret of success. And the secret of success is knowing which button on my desk to push to get somebody with a college degree to come in and tell me what to do. You know, people ask me, they say, are you a con man or a saint? And I look back at them and I say, well, I got no wings on my back, so I guess that answers the questions. I must be a con man. And I'll admit it, I'm probably the greatest con man that ever lived, because I'm going around conning people into believing in themselves. You see, there's a lot of people on this call. You know, all I've done, every one of them had it in them. Every one of them wanted to be a person. They didn't want to be a face in the crowd. They wanted to be an individual. And all I've done is say, hey, I did it and you can do it too. You know, they're tired of hearing about the Middle East. They're tired of hearing about high gas prices. They're tired of hearing about strikes. They're tired of hearing and reading about negativism. They want to hear somebody say something about you can do it in spite of all this junk. You know, the system is controlled by a few people that's telling the rest of us what to do. And I've figured out how to take over the American government, and I need your help. To do it peacefully, of course. And now here's how we're going to do it. You know, the national debt of the United States has just risen to an all-time high. It jumped from $365 billion with a B to $420 billion. And you know why our debt's so high? It's so all the big shots with all the money can loan it to us and get all that high interest. You know, you and I, Ben, Dave, we're all paying all this interest. They don't want us to get out of debt. There ain't nobody planning for us to get out of debt. You know, you can elect a president no matter whether he's Democrat or Republican. They're going to keep that debt high so they can make all that interest on us. But, you know, they got it smooth, baby. Most of us don't even know what's going on. And I didn't either 3 years ago, but I'm finally figuring it out. They want to keep that debt high, man. Well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to loan it to them, and we're going to repossess it. You know, in closing, it would be nice if I could just touch automatically you believe and have all the confidence that I have in you. It took me years to get it. You see, I believe in you more than you believe in yourself, and if you can only start tonight to believe in yourself, just a fraction, just a little bit of what I believe in you, then you can be, do, or have anything that you want. Thank you, Ben.
Awesome. Now, Dave, Connie, you probably recognize the voice.
Right.
You probably know that our guest, Glenn Turner, tonight was being presented by our good friend, Lee Collins.
Right.
Lee, thank you for presenting those words and that energy of Glenn Turner. I know that I was feeling deep down inside, those words were hitting me and hitting my backbone in different ways. Would you please share with our listeners a little about Glenn Turner and how he's so inspirational to you, please?
Ben, I thank you for this, first of all. You know, I do this just to honor Glenn because I do love him deeply. He spoke at an event that I was at about 3 years ago that I say is the event that changed my life. Now, basically what happened is, you know, I called Robin that night, and I said, honey, I'm quitting my job. And, you know, a short time later, that's exactly what I did, and I haven't looked back since. You know, Glenn is very inspirational monetarily, spiritually, he's just been an inspiration overall. You know, he made over $400 million in 4 years, and it all started with about $5,000 that he borrowed. And this was all from an eighth-grade dropout hair lip from South Carolina who nobody said would do anything with his life and thought that, you know, everybody would have to take care of him forever and he'd never amount to anything. You know, that sort of resonated with me because that's the same sort of thing I was told when I was growing up, that I'd either be dead or in jail by the time I was 21 and I'd never accomplish anything that I was supposed to. I far outlived that. You know, but even beyond that, one of the things that I can tell you is that Glenn W. Turner has taught his techniques and strategies to over a million people in 47 countries and 5 languages. Can you imagine what kind of impact we would have today? Or we would have today once we start doing this, once we can reach that many people. It's just amazing. It's inspirational to me, and I appreciate you letting me honor Glenn by letting me talk a little bit about some of the things that he's presented in the past. I want people to hear this and understand this.
I'm grateful for your coming on, and thank you. And Dave Licati, I'm curious about your perspective in terms of the similarities between Glenn Turner and Pelmanism.
You know, I think there's a lot of similarities between, you know, between Glenn and Pelmanism and many of the people. If you wanted to say Tony Robbins or, you know, any of the other motivators of the current motivators of our day, I think they all, you know, they all have a common theme. And that common theme is of, you know, of taking challenges and becoming a better person. How do you become a better and more effective person? How do you become more efficient? How do you do these things? And also to give you the support and say it's possible. So even as early as Pelman, you know, Pelmanism, when they were, you know, when he was talking about this is how, you know, this is how you become a better person. Let me support you. You know, his goal was, and Glenn's and most other people who are doing personal development motivation today, who are doing very legitimate stuff. You know, at the end of the Pelmanism course, I'm going to see if I can, if you give me like 10 seconds here, I'm going to see if I can find it and read it to you, because I think it's really important, you know, this idea that he's carried forward. And
I'm looking forward to your finding the quote. We've been talking about Pelmanism, and it turns out that we've got Pelmanism listening in to the audio streaming online. And so he's asking for us to, he's asking, what has Pelmanism done for us, and can we give some specifics other than stirring up this attention today? So, Pelman, thank you for listening in, brother, and here comes the first in a litany of specifics, and we're going to engage our listeners and those that have been reading about Pelmanism or those that have studied Pelmanism in their life. We're encouraging you to call in on the landline, and then we're going to call for questions and greater interaction in just a moment. Dave, did that give you enough time to find that quote?
I'm 2 seconds away, Ben, but I'll set it up by saying this. You know, basically the idea and what I was getting to is this idea is that, you know, what they say is, you know, that once you've completed this, that you so here it is. It says, thus, whilst a book as a printed product must have an ending, the Pelman Institute's course of training is really a continuous process, and as it is our strong desire that having begun well, you should go on in the same spirit. We want to help you get to this end. And we invite correspondence on any matter that is strictly germane to mind and memory training in any of its branches. We say to all students, do not look upon yourselves as if you had ceased all association with us, because the formal course is at an end. Write sometimes about your difficulties, and if you happen to be in town, call at the Institute. We'll be glad to know you personally. In this way, all Pelman students have more than a passing interest in the work of the Institute. They are what we may call life members, and thus able all the more confidently to recommend the course of training to other people. So the idea is that all of these people share is that they want people to take their ideas and expound on them. They want them to continue to evolve them and share them. And, you know, I think Glenn is exceptional at encouraging people to share them. But the similarities are really that people are trying to make good people better. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that someone told me one time that applies to this, although not perfectly, was, you know, that you don't judge the institution by the man, you judge the man by the institution. And, you know, so the idea is that, you know, is the person upholding the ideas that he was taught and if he's not, then it's him that's flawed, not necessarily the idea. And in those cases, you know, we've got these people here who have, you know, who have made significant efforts. Now, it's interesting. There's also some other kind of ideas around it. You know, Pellman, or not Pellman, but Inover died. He died bankrupt functionally. He had 131, I think 131 pounds to his name when he died. And, you know, he just didn't have any money. Now, and we know that Glenn Turner obviously had his own difficulties with the law and ended up serving a little bit of time and those kind of things. But oftentimes, you know, sometimes the best ideas are those that are most challenged or people don't understand them.
But people and have so, out and out called Pellmanism, they've called it witchcraft, they've called it supernatural, they've called it Satanism. I mean, Pellmanism, granted it was referenced in a book called The Pagan, but, you know, the Pellmanism has been called from the, you know, from the pulpit, unholy names. What is the source of that kind of controversy?
You know, it's interesting because, like, Pellmanism is also a card game. And so if you look at Pellmanism from that perspective, a lot of people, you know, people who have certain certain religious beliefs or other kind of preclusions that way will find that that's often what they're referring to when they call it witchcraft or something like that. They see it, but they're not talking about the system of learning. And then some people are. Some people see any attempt to, really any attempt to try and raise your awareness or, you know, a lot of people see hypnotism as being something that is, that's inappropriate. Many religions do not allow their members to practice hypnotism or to be hypnotized because they feel like that's a time when they're not in control of their mind. And Pellmanism really is the opposite of that, because what he was really attempting to do is give people control over their mind. What he was most fearful of is that people didn't ultimately, they didn't ultimately or weren't actively taking control of their mind or its processes. And so as a result, they were being sort of slackers.
Awesome. I mean, not awesome about people being slackers, but an awesome explanation as to why people from the pulpit might have denigrated this work and referred to it as unholy. I'm going to ask Lee, in terms of whether it be the ideas of Glenn Turner or of Pellmanism, I want you, and I'm imagining it's going to come from Glenn Turner, but can you give me one specific nugget that he gave you that caused you to change your life, to change your perspective? Is there something specific in what you heard that magical night that you can share with our listeners so that they might be able to better grasp how Glenn Turner changed your mind?
It all really came about because, I heard him talk from stage. We met after I spoke to him, told him how meaningful it was to me, and he looked at me and he said, you know, you remind me of me when I was younger. You remind me of, you know, the dreams that I had, the things that I wanted to do. It was more, you know, I don't want to get all touchy-feely on the call, but sometimes it's just all about, you know, the way that person makes you feel. You know, when somebody who believes in you more than you believe in yourself looks you in the eye and says you can do it, it implants something inside you. It's sort of like analogous to the mind hack spin that we've talked about and we've experienced together. It's just, you know, one of those things where, you know, this very inspirational story. I think one of the things, let me just go back to this. He said that he was born with an advantage, Ben. And he said the advantage he had in his life was a hair lift. He said, I just remembered this. He said, you know, everybody has a hair lift. Sometimes it ain't on the lip, sometimes it's someplace else. So what he encouraged people to do was to embrace and get past your hair lip. So, you know, if you think your ears are too... When I was small, I'm just going to share this, you know, this is real personal, but when I was younger, you know, my ears were larger in proportion to where my head was. So I was called big ears all the time as a kid. Mm-hmm. So at that point in my life, that was my hair lip. That was the thing that was holding me back because I always grew my hair long to cover my ears because I was ashamed. But, you know, nowadays I have no issue with that or really anything else. I'm very confident in what I do, and I owe a lot of that to Ben and him. I'm sorry, to Glenn, and Glenn showing me how to overcome my hair lip.
Cool. We certainly are about overcoming our obstacles, but I'd like to take this call to another level, where we truly gift our listeners with an idea that once they grasp it, that they're not going to be able to return to their old form of reality, because that new idea that they're grasping will forever alter the way that they see themselves and their function and their place in the world around us.
That's really important, and I know it's going to be big, and I don't want to lose a simple idea first. May I share that?
No, I was going to throw it on you to take us there, Dave. So it's now on it's now on you to gift us
great.
With something
that
big.
So then I'll try and make a reasonable segue. You know, the idea is this. Number one, if you look at this, you know, going back to your idea of how are these people, what do they have in common? All of these people are exceptional marketers. See, I discovered Pellmanism years ago when I was studying direct marketing, and when I was looking at speak from the platform and that kind of thing, I studied the pitchmen and the preachers from the turn of the 20th century. You know, the people who stood on the back of wagons and sold patent medicine, and the people who did tent revivals and all those kind of things. I started looking at what they had in common, and I discovered this Pellmanism, because he was one of the first people who was selling a product by mail. And he was selling these courses, these booklets that you could get, and he had all kinds of neat devices. Like, you got these, you know, the 12 booklets and or the 15 booklets, depending on what you bought and which course you bought. And if you bought all 15 of them, you got a handsome box to put them in. And, you know, you would get the box as a gift for completing your order. And this was, you know, and this is, we're talking about, you know, the early 1900s, like 1910s and 1920s. And he was doing direct response marketing at that moment. And so a lot of these ideas, if you look, have moved forward that you wouldn't say. And what's interesting to me about it is that now, all of these years later, you know, nearly 100 years later from when he started, we're still having a conversation about Pellmanism.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the effectiveness of marketing. That's the effectiveness of creating, you know, a powerful brand, a powerful story, all of those things, that people pick it up and they make it new again because, or they discover it and they see it as the basis, you know, they discover it as their history. So people discover this and find out it's the history of their industry, if they're in marketing or if they're in direct marketing or if they're in platform sales or those kind of things. People, you know, people have a hard time imagining that, in fact, that a lot of the personal development stuff that people hear about today had its origins in, you know, in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and that it also had its origins in tent revival meetings and wagon shows that sold patent medicine and all kinds of other things.
And so bringing up that these ideas were spread by marketers,
mm-hmm.
There is one thing that I was raised with. I mean, I was raised by hippies. You know, my dad and my mom might have come from some very different worlds in different respects. My grandfather was the youngest colonel in the Air Force during World War II, and my dad's mom was a limousine liberal or a champagne sipping socialist, if you want to call them that. So they were at, you know, very, very far ends of the political spectrum. But the one thing that my mom and dad had, similar was some sort of love or reverence for hippies and anti-war movement in the late 1960s. And when I was born in 1968, I got the middle name of Siddhartha. So, I mean, one thing that they shared was being allergic to marketing.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of discussion around marketing is what enslaves people. Marketing is what ruins forests. Marketing is what destroys the landscape. Marketing is what's corrupting our schools. And what I'm hearing from both of you, from Lee and from you, Dave, is that these guys who gifted such large audiences with the ability to believe in themselves, and I know Glenn Turner turned many of his followers into millionaires. I don't know that for Pellmanism. I know that Pat O'Brien was able to go from being a struggling musician to being a comfortable man who could play music for passion and didn't always have to hunt the next gig out because of Pellmanism. So, but I can certainly see that a healthy respect for marketing has spread these empowering ideas.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that it's important to, I mean, marketing is certainly responsible for these ideas, but I think what's equally true is that, you know, that somebody created the ideas in the first place, and then they found a mechanism for spreading the ideas, and marketing is the mechanism. And so ideas, whether they're, you know, will not spread necessarily just on their own if they're left fallow, but it takes some effort to do that. And when it's done properly, when that marketing is done appropriately, it can be very effective. And it can also be not effective too. I mean, I shouldn't say it shouldn't be not effective. It can also be it can also be counterproductive in some ways. I mean, propaganda is an example of that. You know, propaganda can stick around for hundreds of years or at least dozens of years and still have its same effect long after it's outgrown its usefulness, for example. And so marketing is a very powerful tool, though, that virtually everyone, I mean, this is my belief now, this isn't a Pelmanism belief or anything else, but it's my belief that would be flying in the face of your parents is that marketing isn't a sin. And that it is, that in fact every single human being would be best served if they understood salesmanship and marketing. They would get much more out of their lives because they know how to best facilitate getting what they need.
Lee, I'd love to keep you involved in this discussion before we ask our other listeners to get involved. Is there a specific that Glenn Turner gave you that you've continually you shared with us the hare lip, but is there another specific that you know rocked open your mind, that split your hair back in a way in which it had never been done before?
There is one other thing, and this specific advice is exactly what he gave. And, you know, one of the things I want to reflect back on is back to what Dave was saying in marketing. Just imagine this, in the late 60s, early 70s, this young man who was an eighth grade dropout borrowed $5,000 and created a mega empire worth over $400 million in just a few short years. And he did this mainly by word of mouth. He charged people $25 to come in for the opportunity to spend $5,000 with him to buy the course. It's just an amazing thing, and it's a great testament to the marketing and to, you know, the word of mouth and the way that ideas can spread, especially powerful ideas and controversial ideas like what he was spreading. I think one of the big things that Glenn told me in his message was this, and if you can just imagine, don't let what's outside your head affect what's inside your head.
Hmm.
So the power behind that is, you know, you have to become a strong enough person. Pelmanism is a path to that. There are other paths to it, too. And a lot of them have their base in Pelmanism. You know, Ben, when you asked me about Pelmanism a few days ago, I didn't even recall that I'd purchased those books. I don't recall how long ago, but I found them on my drive here. I just did a search, and they were there. And it just amazed me that, you know, I had this and I'd read it before and it didn't even resonate by name until we sat on the call again tonight. But I think the biggest thing that Glenn taught me, and the one thing that he taught a lot of the people who followed him and became millionaires because of what he taught them, was don't let what's going on outside your head affect what's going on inside your head. You know, you're a strong person, you're an individual, you have a gift and you have a talent, and in some ways you are unique and special, but, you know, don't let all that junk that's going on in the world and everywhere affect you. You know, people can say, you know, did you watch news? Did you hear about the gas prices? I don't really care about any of that stuff. All that stuff's going on outside my head. And inside my head, I have my little perfect world, and I'm living in it. And if you want to be a part of it, you can be a part of it. But if not, I'm going to, in some way, shape, or form, limit the amount of contact we have with each other, or somehow, if you're a bad enough person, then, you know, I can't resonate with you, then we're not going to speak much. So the big thing that he told me, Ben, that's really changed my life is don't let what's going on outside your head affect what's going on inside your head.
Awesome. Appreciate that temporary autonomous zone that is known as the inside of our mind. For those that have called into the Bridge Line, we'd love you, if you have a Pelmanism story to share of your own, hit *2, and we're going to bring you onto the program. When you hit *2, if you would say, hi, Ben, this is, and insert your name there. So now is the time when you want to hit *2. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you guys for coming on the call. It appears as though we do not have guests that are interested in sharing their Pelmanism experiences, whether they've just started reading the book or whether they have had a life of change from absorbing or applying the Pelmanism. I'm getting tripped
Pelmanism.
Up on Pelmanism, on the methodology. So I'm going to do one more call, and then if somebody doesn't speak up, then I'm going to wish you all well and offer a last word to Lee and Dave, and then we'll say goodnight. So if you have personal experience with Pelmanism, hit star 2 and say hi, Ben. This is, and insert your name there.
Or Ben, if they just have a question they want to ask us relative to this, they could do that too. Is that possible?
Absolutely. Going once. We've got 16 people listening. I know.
The moderator has disconnected.
I think Dave's still here. I think Ben may have gotten disconnected, so he'll probably be calling back in and going from there. Who else is still here?
You and I, as far as I know.
Okay, cool. Well, we'll keep talking for a minute then and go from there. So I
got disconnected.
Okay. Ben just popped in and let me know he got disconnected. He's going to dial back in real quickly. An interesting, I turned Ben on to a movie today that probably most people, if anybody on this call has ever seen, I'll be super impressed. In fact, if you have been, if you have seen this movie, then I strongly encourage you to pop in right now, press star 2 and let me know. But the movie is called The Accountant. It's a fascinating little movie that's 36 minutes long or 38 minutes long. But the most poignant question in the whole movie, and Ben, Ben, are you on now? I think you are.